Everyone hits a bump in the road. What do you do with it? Be inspired as we explore the ways people experience, navigate, and manage the ups and downs and twists and turns in this road trip called life. Sarah Dransfield is living a remarkable life. I want to do everything, she says, and that spirit is born out of difficulty. At just 16 years old, Sarah was diagnosed with osteosarcoma. The diagnosis eventually led to her having her leg amputated, and that eventually led to a most inspirational modeling career. She's appeared in Italian Vogue and on numerous other platforms where Sarah shows that disability is often just a part of life. Sarah, welcome to Bump in the Road. If you would, tell us your story.
Yeah, so hi, I'm Sarah. I'm from Huddersfield in the United Kingdom. My story actually starts about 8 years ago now in 2012. I had a normal upbringing and everything, normal childhood. It was in 2012 that really everything changed. So I'd been on holiday with my family to Thailand, normal holiday, I'd say. We had a nice time, doing a lot of activities, quite active. And then I stepped off the plane from Thailand and I felt this really pain, like strong pain in my knee. I was unsure what it was or, you know, if I'd just been sat funny on the plane. But this pain carried on for 3 months. It just got increasingly worse as time went on. And I was diagnosed with bone cancer in March. It was March time. So at this point, I had felt this pain for about 3 months. And I'd been to numerous doctors and to a physio, and it was eventually picked up with an MRI scan. I was diagnosed on my mum's birthday. So she was told before me and had to come to terms with finding out I had got cancer. And then she felt she couldn't tell me herself because she didn't know any, you know, she didn't know all the answers or anything. So she took me to the doctors with my dad as well. And they explained to me that I had osteosarcoma, which is a form of bone cancer, which generally happens in young men. So I'm a bit out of the ordinary, but it does happen to young ladies, but generally it's guys.
And you're just 16 at this point, right?
Yeah, just 16. So it was a massive shock because this pain in my knee, I thought I'd just sprained my leg or somehow injured it. I never thought it would be cancer.
What went through your mind? I can't even imagine.
Oh, it was, first thing I said was I going to die? Because that was just what came to my mind when I heard cancer. I've been quite lucky and I hadn't known anybody who'd had cancer. So I didn't know anything about it. I was just so shocked. And I think my mum and dad were the same because they didn't know any, you know, they didn't know the outlook, like what the prognosis was or anything. So the doctor who diagnosed me said I'd lose a year out of my life. Potentially they might be able to scrape the cancer off my knee and I'd be fine, or I might lose my leg. So all in that conversation, I had everything going on. I didn't know what was going, you know.
And you started with chemo, didn't you?
Yeah. I had chemotherapy for a full year. So the cancer osteosarcoma that I had, obviously it's in your bone, and I had to have really intense chemotherapy. It was a real mixture. There was doxorubicin, methotrexate, ifosfamide, but it was a real intense year. I was so sick. I was really ill with the chemo. The doctors say that I was the worst case they'd ever seen. Every anti-sickness they gave me, like nothing was working for me. I lost a lot of weight and I had to have a feeding tube to feed me. But that didn't do much because obviously you're quite sick when you have chemotherapy, and then that kept coming up and it was just like a vicious circle, really.
When you're in the midst of all that, what are you thinking?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even, it's all a bit of a whirlwind now. I think at the time I was just going along with it, thinking, I have to do this, I have to have this treatment. You know, it's making me so ill, but I was just thinking, I'm hoping it's making me better at the same time.
Now, I remember one round of chemo where halfway through, I remember hitting a point where I was getting really tired.
Mm.
And I was at that crucial point where it was like, yay, I'm halfway through. And then it was like, oh my God, I'm halfway through. Will it work?
Yeah. Yeah. You get to that point, I think, where you think, you know, you want to have all, you're having this treatment, and then all of a sudden you think, I'm hoping it is working and all this is, you know, worth it kind of thing. But I heard when I were having my treatment, if you, the more sick you are, the more the chemo's working. So I just kept thinking it must be doing its job if it's making me this poorly.
But the chemo didn't work, did it?
No. So the I was supposed to have the bone in my knee replaced with metal. So obviously I could save my leg. But the tumor was that deep into my bone and near the nervous system. And there must be a big artery that runs down your leg. It was very close to that if they did operate, then they might have, it had been really risky. So the best chance for survival was to have an amputation above my knee. So that's what I had to go with. But when I got told the news about that, I just thought, no, I can't have an amputation. There's no chance. I don't know how I'd live without my leg. And there was so much going through my mind. And I pretty much said no to the doctor when he was telling me. There was about 10 different professionals in the room, and I think I was a bit of a diva, but it was just an awful conversation to have. But afterwards, I spoke to my nurse and she talked me around, and she said, you know, you want to live. This is your best chance. So I made the decision in the end. I did want to go for it. I did want to live and live a normal life. So, yeah, we went for the amputation. But yeah, I think that was 3 weeks before. And when I got to the surgery day, it was still sinking in. And going down to surgery, I just went, I was kicking and screaming. I still didn't want it to happen, but I knew deep down it was the right thing.
I don't think you come to terms with that in a week or a month or even in years.
No, not at all. It takes a long time. I think for me, even when I did have the amputation, for many weeks and months after, I was still having chemotherapy, so I was still in the midst of everything, just getting on with it. But I think after the treatment, and when you try and get back to some normality, and when the nurses and doctors are not there anymore, and when you're back to your, just being on your own, I think that's when it hits you the most.
Was it hard adjusting to a new leg?
Yeah, it was really hard. So first of all, when I just had the surgery, I didn't get a leg straight away. I think my leg had to, it was quite swollen. It had to reduce in size before I could try one out. So I was going to physio whilst having my chemotherapy, which was tough because, like you said, you're just so tired. You just don't have the energy. So the thought of having to like learn to walk whilst going through the treatment still was just, it was quite a lot to deal with. So I did what I could, but I think after my chemotherapy finished, I then focused on learning to walk again. And it took me quite a long time, really, to get to where I am now.
What's the hardest part? Is it getting the prosthetic fitted properly? Is it balance? Is it mobility? What are the things that you have to think about?
I think it's everything, really. Balance is a big one because, you know, your center of gravity, you're so used to your two legs and being stood on your two legs to even then, I'm brilliant at balancing now. I think that's just come over time, but the balance when you're learning to walk with your prosthetic, it is different because it's like, it's a foreign object. It's not your leg, is it? So that was hard. The energy as well. It apparently walking with a prosthetic takes up twice as much energy as, you know, a normal person walking with the legs. So that was something, and building up the muscle in, I call it my little leg, building up my muscle in there to be able to wear the prosthetic. And it was a long journey because my leg had to, it's shrunk down over the 8 years now, but it was shrinking down every 6 months to a year. So I'd have to get a new socket for the prosthetic quite often, which was, you know, back and forth to the hospital quite a lot. But I've got to the point where it's stabilized a lot more now, which is a good thing.
So when all this started, what were your plans? Were you going to college? What were you thinking about doing?
So I'd just started college in the September, and it was the March time that I was diagnosed. So I was doing health and social care. I was studying psychology and applied science. So I wasn't really sure where I was going, but I thought, I know I liked caring for people. I was interested in psychology, and I just thought maybe at the end of college I could possibly go into nursing. That's always at the back of my mind, but I haven't become a nurse. So,
when you were done with treatment, did you pick up your college plans again, or what direction did you start to take?
Yeah, so because I was 16, and at the time in the UK, you didn't have to be in education until you were 18. Now it's changed. You do have to be until you're 18. So I was quite lucky, I suppose, that when I was in hospital, that I didn't have to carry on with my college work. I could just put it to the back for a moment and focus on getting better and everything. There were other people there younger than 16, obviously doing the schoolwork, and finding that so hard to keep up to whilst having the treatment. It was so difficult for them. So I felt lucky in that aspect. But when I finished my treatment the following March, I went back to the college in September, but it was so hard because all my friends had left. It was just, I found it really difficult. I was quite on my own. So I was now in my brother's year, who was 2 years younger than me. But I felt so much older with what I'd just been through and everything I'd just dealt with. So that was a difficult time. I was also still learning to walk at that point, and I had crutches, and people just didn't know me. I looked like a different person. I had short hair, I'd put weight on. I was just not who I was before, but the teachers obviously knew who I was, but the new students that came through, I didn't really have any friends there. So, but I went back to do health and social care. I dropped the psychology and the applied science, but I thought I'd focus on health and social because that's what I enjoyed before. And I think my outlook changed, and I thought I'll do what I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, the social isolation with cancer is something everybody talks about.
Yeah,
I can't imagine how hard it had to be what you were about 18, I guess, when you went back.
Yeah.
I mean, did you have any sort of peer group anywhere?
Yeah, so going through my treatment, I'd made friends in the hospital and everything, which was great. So we've got a charity over here called the Teenage Cancer Trust, and they have wards in the hospital for teenagers. So we're really lucky that I was able to make friends and people I could relate to, and like different kind of friends that just really understand you. It was really nice to have them. But my friends from school, it was really difficult because they were still so young themselves. So for them to deal with me having cancer and understanding what I was going through, they just couldn't. But I did keep my friends. I just think they found it quite difficult, and they were getting on with being teenagers themselves. So to have to come and visit me, they did visit me, but there were a few friends that struggled, and then some that really were there for me a lot more. But yeah, I think it's made our friendship like stronger now over time. And I think I made a couple of friends in college when I did go back, but they didn't know the real me, if you know what I mean. Yeah, I think the friends that know me best now are the ones that knew me before and have known me through everything, and the friends I've made along the way.
This is a really hard, this is a hard question to ask because I need to be more specific, but I can't be. How has cancer changed your outlook? And I know there's so many pieces to this.
Yeah. a massive question. Yeah, I think it's changed my outlook massively. I always think back and I wonder how my life would have been if I didn't have cancer. Like, would I be living like a parallel life to what I'm living now? I don't know what I'd be doing. But it really has changed me. I think I really want to try and make the most of life now and do everything that I can. I really want to travel more. I just want to do everything because, you know, I could have died back in 2012. I might not have been here, but I've been lucky that I am. And I think it's like a second chance that I just want to grab hold of, really. Yeah, I think I really appreciate my family and my friends more as well. So any time that I spend with them is more precious, I guess. Yeah, it changes you massively. But I think it's changed me for the better. So I was quite shy before. I now do talks and, you know, different things like that. And I would never have dreamt of doing that before. And even though I now look different and, you know, coming to terms with that and then standing there in front of people and speaking about my story, I would never have done that before. So, yeah, it's massively changed my outlook.
And you're doing some new things too, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm doing all sorts. I like to try and keep myself busy.
I understand you have a spread in Italian Vogue.
I do, yeah. I'm quite shocked about that.
Tell us about that. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I did a photo shoot in like a town close to where I live with my management. And the shoot was a bit quirky and a bit different. And they just sent the picture out there and Italian Vogue picked it up. And then the next thing, I get an email saying, here's the picture of you in Italian Vogue. So quite amazing, really. Quite a highlight.
Now, how did you get into modeling?
I'd been looking on Instagram and I'd found a management that really focused on diversity and people with disabilities. And they had the books were open. So I thought, oh, I'll apply and I'll see what happens. I wasn't sure whether they'd want me or not. But they did. And then I had a photo shoot with them to like make my portfolio and start with them. And my first job for them was for River Island, which to me was massive because it's on every high street over here. It's a massive company. So I was suddenly down in London doing a photo shoot for River Island and I was just with other models that were really, you know, professionals that had been doing it for years and they were asking me what jobs I'd done before and it was all new to me. I'd not done anything. So I was just going along with it and hoping for the best, really. But we went down to London for another job. I've done a few shoots for River Island and we went into the River Island on Oxford Street and I saw myself behind the counter on this big billboard and I was shocked. I was so shocked, but I did feel quite proud.
Have you gotten a lot of feedback from people in the disability community about your modeling?
Yeah, I think I've got Instagram and I post on there when I've got when I do something new or anything like that, and I've got quite a lot of followers who are disabled and they love seeing it. They think it's great that, you know, disability is being shown out there and being made to be normal, which it should be.
Yeah, everybody has something. Everybody faces something. Mm. And this idea that we're supposed to be Instagram glossy and perfect just doesn't fit reality.
No, not at all. You look at some people's Instagrams and they all look the same and you think, it can't be real. It's, you know, it's not real, is it? So I do like going on Instagram and seeing real profiles, like real life.
Yeah, I do too. As a matter of fact, I've been a little absent from my Instagram account. I have to get back on it.
Yeah.
But with travel on hold for the moment, my quantity and quality of pictures has really plummeted.
Yeah. If you're not going anywhere, it's hard, isn't it?
You know, one of the things I have to think about is, you know, I went through cancer in my 50s, totally different experience than going through it at, you know, in your teens and 20s. What do you do about dating and things like that? I mean, what do you even think about things along those lines? I mean, the normal activities that most people are doing seem to be outside your realm of possibility, at least for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I first got told about my amputation, I thought, oh my God, no one is going to love me. You know, it just goes through your mind and you think, I'm never going to get a boyfriend. Why would they want one with one leg, you know? So for me, for a long time, I just thought, you know, it wasn't possible. I didn't really even think about it because I thought that they wouldn't find me attractive or, you know. So a few years went by and I started to get, you know, feeling back myself and more. I think you've got to feel confident in yourself and you've got to feel happy in yourself before you think you can start dating or whatever. And I wanted to come to terms with how I felt as well. But I did go on a few dates. I started to go out with my friends, you know, on the weekends and get dressed up. And I think, by the time I got to 20, I'd been on a few dates and things. But when I was 21, my mum seen that you could apply for the show First Dates. I don't know if, I think you might have that over in the United States. Have you got the
I don't know. I haven't
seen
dates?
No, so it's quite a big show over here. And you go on it and you basically have a date and you don't know who you're going to be meeting or anything, but there's a team that work behind, you know, behind the scenes, and they really work hard to match you up with someone that they think you'd be compatible with. So they got to know me, the producers and things, and then they got to know the person I'd be going on a date with. And then I went for this date and we were all being filmed. It was in London. It was quite amazing because I'd watched this program for years and I just thought I'll have a go and see if I can do it. And that's where I met my boyfriend Phil, who I've now been with nearly 4 years. So that was quite an incredible journey really, because I went down there thinking, oh, I might just get a date and see what happens. I might meet somebody. And then the people that matched us did a really good job.
That's such a great story.
Yeah, it's a bit different every time we meet someone. Like if we meet someone new, they're always quite shocked. That's how we've met.
If you could rewrite your story, would you?
Oh, that's a tricky one. I don't think I would, because I just think the things that I've done since, I've done so much, so many opportunities. And yeah, I deal with my disability on a daily basis. There's no hiding away from it. But I don't know. I think all the things I've done have just made me who I am now. And I feel like maybe I was meant to be who I am now. A few years ago, I was lucky enough to meet the Queen. I would never have met the Queen otherwise. I've done all sorts, from sailing with a cancer charity. I'm an ambassador for another cancer charity, and I've done skydives and just things that I don't think I would ever thought to do.
You went skydiving?
Yeah. Oh, it was an experience. Oh dear.
Would you do it again?
I would do, but I think I'd like to do it somewhere with a nice scene, like somewhere really nice, somewhere really warm or something. So we did it over here at a place called Hull, and it was like a grey day. It wasn't the nicest day, and I just thought, oh, if I did it in somewhere like Dubai, that'd be really nice. So if I did it again, maybe it'd be somewhere a bit more exotic.
Did you jump in tandem?
Yeah, I was with a guy. I had a guy there.
An instructor, yeah.
Yeah, an instructor, yeah. And obviously I couldn't wear my prosthetic because a bit dangerous, like falling from the sky with my prosthetic on. So
it's a little dangerous falling from the sky without one too.
Yeah. Yeah, never mind with one on. Oh gosh. So that was quite difficult in itself because I had to use my crutches to get up into the plane. And then when we landed on the ground, it was then, how do I get about? So it was a bit more than just your average skydive, but it was, yeah, I'm glad I've done it. Really am.
Do you have pictures from that?
Yeah, I do actually.
Oh, yeah. I bet those are great. Memories.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, brilliant.
Tell me, if you were to give some advice to somebody facing a bump in the road in general, what advice would you give to them?
Wow. I think I would say try and talk to the people that you love. I always found, you know, talking to my family helped me the most. I think for me, when I was going through everything, try and have something to focus on or something to look forward to. So I think that really did help me. So, you know, if you know in a few weeks' time you've got like a little something to look forward to, seeing a friend going somewhere, going for a walk somewhere, anything, then I think that really can help you get through like a tough patch. I don't know, really. I think mainly, yeah, try and stay as positive as you can. I know it's not always possible. But for me as well, like reaching out to people and looking, I know that I always don't always look online at things, but finding people that are in a similar position to you to be able to talk to them, I think that for me really helped me and is still helping me now, I think. I've got a group of friends now and we call ourselves Legs, Legs, Legs. So we've all got one leg and we're a group of young ladies and we're, you know, if we ever need anyone to talk to, we've always got each other. And I know that's not always possible for everybody, but they've kind of, you know, been my support for a few years now.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.